What's up, everyone? The Pro Football Weekly Podcast is back. Thanks for being with me, your host, Arthur Arkish. And we have arrived at the home stretch of our offseason recap series. Just a few episodes left. Yes, it's kind of nut crunching time, if you will, with training camps opening around the league. But don't worry, we'll have a couple more podcasts this week and next, and you will be up to speed on the whole league as camps get going. So some fun interviews scheduled for you today. We've got Bob Condotta of the Seattle Times up first, talking Seahawks, and then Matt Williamson, a special guest today from The Score, from the Steelers Radio Network. Matt's work is all over, and he's going to talk some Steelers with me today, and looking forward to bringing you those interviews shortly. Before we do, as I mentioned, camps opening around the league this week, so make sure you keep it plugged in at profootballweekly.com. Also finishing up a couple other series over there. I'm doing fantasy football depth charts. We've got some stuff that continues to go up from our summer magazine. And a nice column this morning from Greg Gabriel on the evolution of NFL training camps and how teams have sort of adjusted to more of a more of a country club atmosphere, and how it's affected their preparation both in camp and the preseason. So please check out all that new stuff at profootballweekly.com, and please head over to iTunes and subscribe to the PFW podcast. You won't regret it, I promise. Lots of good stuff happening on this show this offseason, and that will only continue and hopefully ramp up as the season rolls around. So head to iTunes, please subscribe to the PFW podcast, and leave us a rating and a review while you are over there. Okay, before we head in with Bob Condotta of Seattle Times, a little bit of a disclaimer. I did record this podcast before I left for vacation last week. We've gotten a little bit backlogged here at PFW. We're doing the best we can to get these interviews up in a timely fashion. But I teed up Bob with the Richard Sherman and the Russell Wilson question, how it's going to affect things, how it has affected things. Well, Richard has now spoken to ESPN on the matter, so make sure you hear the words straight from his mouth. But I still think that what Bob said, and particularly when you keep in mind we talked about this before Sherman had even addressed the issue publicly, I obviously still think it's valuable. I still found it interesting, so we're going to include it in the interview. But after that, lots of good Seahawks discussion on their offseason as well, and we'll bring that to you right now with Bob Condotta of the Seattle Times. Up next on the Pro Football Weekly podcast, we head to Seattle, where Bob Condotta of the Seattle Times is nice enough to take some time out during his quiet period of the offseason to chat a little bit of Seahawks. Bob, what's happening? Thanks for joining us.
Sure. Yeah. Hey, thanks for having me. Yeah. Not a whole lot. Been sort of a quiet offseason for the Seahawks so far, which has been kind of nice. It's really quiet in Seattle when it comes to the Seahawks, but not much going on right now with them.
All right. Make sure our listeners, if you're not following Bob already, do so on Twitter at B Condotta. It's B-C-O-N-D-O-T-T-A. Bob, I do have to ask, it wasn't always quiet throughout the off season, and you're probably blue in the face from hearing about all this, but let's get to it quickly at the top. Do you think that we've heard the last on the infighting? And it was, of course, reported by Seth Wickersham of ESPN earlier in the off season. The reported infighting between Richard Sherman and company and Russell Wilson. What's your take on that, and where do you think it goes from here, if anywhere?
Well, I don't know if infighting was the exact right phrase there. I mean, I don't know that we ever heard of fight between them. What I think is more relevant is maybe was there some kind of divisions at times and some jealousies on sure. of one player over who's getting attention, who's getting the credit for things like that, and the idea that maybe Sherman felt like Russell's treated a little bit differently by the organization.
Right.
This is the only team Richard's played for, so I think as a lot of people pointed out, star quarterbacks tend to get treated differently everywhere. I don't know that that's unique to Seattle, that they might, and especially given the situation that Russell had. But there's no doubt that that was a great story, and it was news nationally. Mm-hmm. Locally, I think everybody has understood that the way that the Super Bowl against New England ended, was never going to be easy, and if possible, for anybody to sort of move past. And that there's no doubt that the defense is really historically great. I mean, four straight years leading the NFL in total defense and doing some of the things they've done. I mean, you can stack them up against any defense in the history of the NFL. And they have just the one Super Bowl win and to show for that. And, you know, if they really want to be judged with the Steel Curtain or Doomsday or some of these other great defenses of the past, which a lot of these guys are really cognizant of, they know they need to win another Super Bowl or two. And there's no doubt that, you know, it frustrates them. It will frustrate them forever that they didn't win the second one against New England. And I think last year there was some frustration with understanding, you know, as the season went on, that the offense just was not what it had been in the past, and that the defense could play really well as it did for most of the season, despite what I think how it looked at times later in the year due to some of the injuries. But, right. You know, go back week 9, week 10, they were leading the NFL in just about everything again. And you know, they still led the NFL in rushing defense last year. They were still pretty good.
Yep.
But, you know, I think there was certainly some frustration as the year went on, knowing that Russell wasn't at full strength and that the offensive line was struggling and that, you know, the running game wasn't what it had been in the past, that, you know, they probably weren't going to win the Super Bowl. And, you know, they sort of knew they weren't as good as they had been in the past. And I think that caught up to some guys. And you saw Sherman have some pretty well chronicled blow-ups with some coaches and things like that. And so, you know, all that certainly has happened and is an issue. I, you know, is that going to impact them going forward? I think, you know, I go back to after they beat New England last year, mid-November, they looked like they were playing as well as any team in the NFL when they were healthy and things were going well. And it sort of fell apart after that. No doubt. So I don't know that it's anything that can't be overcome on the field. And I think organizations even sort of like it at times when there's kind of that creative tension against guys and, you know, the defense wants to, you know, if the defense wants to prove they're the reason why the franchise is really what it's been. But you know, Russell Wilson wants to prove that as well. That's sort of what you want. You want everybody sort of having something to play for and, right. and wanting to prove they're the guy and stuff like that. So, I think the organization largely shrugged its shoulders about most of it. The most relevant thing is just, you know, Sherman and his future with the team and that they did sort of, you know, dangle him out there at potential trade and things like that. But I think Sherman's also pretty pragmatic enough to understand that it's not going to do him any good to not just play well this season. And, you know, if he wants to have a big future in the NFL and sign another big contract, which after this season is going to be when that's going to start to come to a head, be it in Seattle or be it somewhere else, you know, if he tanks the year or something, that's not going to help him. So I think he understands that he has to go out there and just try to play as well as he can. And I think that's sort of the agreement that they were able to come to in the offseason, was that he's going to be part of the team this year. We'll let the future take care of itself after the future or after the season. And you know, and that everybody sort of needs to, you know, it's going to help everybody if they sort of just for now kind of patch up everything and move on. And so I think that's sort of where the organization is right now.
Okay, that all makes a ton of sense. I am curious, you know, after Marshawn Lynch retires last spring, the Seahawks go into the draft and they triple down at the running back position. This year, you've got the Sherman stuff in the offseason. Obviously, Earl Thomas's injury really kind of sent the defense into a bit of a spiral. Speaking of the future, do you think, and I know NFL decision makers always have to be looking ahead, but 4 draft picks in the secondary now this year, did that feel like maybe there, you know, it was kind of a reactionary move with some of the stuff going on in recent months and weeks and whatnot?
Well, certainly, yeah. I mean, they needed to get better at corner anyway, because Deshaun Shedd, who was the starter opposite Richard last year, you know, blew out his ACL against Atlanta, and he's not going to be ready for the start of the season. So right. They were sort of down a corner going into the offseason already. But no doubt, I mean, you know, Richard has 2 years left on his contract, but typically, you know, teams try to take care of that before you're entering your contract year and given everything. Yeah, there's, you know, there's zero certainty, I think, to Sherman and being in Seattle beyond 2017. Cam Chancellor is also now entering the final year of his contract.
Right.
And then Earl Thomas obviously had the injury as well. You know, so, and they really, you know, they sort of, teams sort of don't have a choice sometimes but to do this when you have a salary cap situation the way they have. I mean, they basically had, you know, as high a paid safety and as high a paid corner in the NFL, so you try to go cheap with the backups. But that caught up to him last year, there's no doubt about it. I you know, when Earl Thomas got hurt, the drop off between Earl and Stephen Terrell was huge and really had a lot to do with why they struggled down the stretch. And you know, even in a couple of the games that Cam Chancellor was out, why they thought, well, they thought, you know, their backup at the time played well played well enough that they wanted to do some things there. So, you know, you saw him go get Bradley McDougal in free agency as well. You saw him, you know, make a couple of little, didn't make headlines nationally, but they did go out and try to address the cornerback spot a little bit even prior to the draft with re-signing, you know, Nico Thorpe and some things like that. They definitely felt like they had to improve the depth in the immediate. And then, no question, if a guy like Shaquille Griffin shows he can play really well this year, then that gives him some options for what might happen down the road when it comes time to make decisions on Richard Sherman. And then same with the safety spots and really Cam. I think Earl Thomas is going to be part of this team for a long time. But, you know, Cam will be 30, and he's had some injuries. And, you know, he plays in a style that strong safeties, real physical strong safeties who take a lot of punishment, sometimes they can hit a wall pretty quickly career-wise. You know, I think both sides sort of are understanding of that a little bit. So there's no doubt they wanted to improve the safety depth, both you know, to cover anything that might happen in the immediate, but also to add some options for down the road. So no question, you know, it's not just the secondary, really. I mean, you got Jimmy Graham entering the last year of his contract. You've got some other guys all over, you know, guy like Cliff Averill, who knows what his future is beyond this season. They've got a lot of really key guys, KJ Wright, a lot of key guys who are sort of in spots where their contract situations make it that who knows what's going to happen beyond 2017. And this is going to be a really key year for the franchise that way to, you know, if they play well, they get to or win a Super Bowl or something, then maybe they decide this group has some time left. If not, you could see a real changing of the guard after the season. And I think everybody understands that, you know, that this is a year when, you know, the future is now, and it's not 2013 anymore when you sort of felt like this was a team of the future for the long haul. This is sort of, they're sort of back to being a little bit of a year-to-year proposition, I think.
And I like when teams are able to acquire talented young players when they still have those established veterans there, because you're both looking ahead and maybe you're able to kind of reap double benefits. And don't get me wrong, I'm guessing that Seattle wouldn't encourage Richard Sherman's behavior, the younger players, to mimic that off the field. But in terms of an on-field mentor, I don't know that you can do a lot better than Richard Sherman or Earl Thomas. So good spots for guys like Delano Hill, Shaquille Griffin, Tedrick Thompson, some really talented young guys coming in. We're chatting with Bob Condotta of the Seattle Times. Make sure you're following him on Twitter at @BCondotta. Let's turn to the offense here for a minute, Bob. I'm guessing we'll be treated to a lot more Eddie Lacy weigh-in updates and potentially bad Seahawks O-line play this season. Let's stick with that latter one first, though. Why do you think Seahawks fans should be confident that maybe that line won't hold back the unit again this year?
Well, yeah, that's a great question, and I understand fully why they would be skeptical. I do think the Seahawks are a little bit better positioned this year heading into the season with the line than they were last year. You know, they're still just banking an awful lot on the young guys that they have and hoping they're going to get better and things like that. But at least those young guys have played now. You know, you're not necessarily just depending on you know, basically three guys who had never played at all and a couple other guys who, you know, hadn't played all that much, basically. You know, they did add Luke Jokel. No doubt he's a question mark. I mean, didn't play great in Jacksonville necessarily and has a knee issue. And Odey Obusi is sort of just a journeyman guy that, you know, they're hoping maybe that he really can turn a corner and help them. But, you know, other than that, they're basically banking on what has been on the roster. And so people are right to be skeptical about that. But, you know, at least they do know this year that Justin Britt can play center. You know, going into last training camp, you weren't sure what you were going to do as center, if it was going to be Britt, how that was going to work out. You know, you do have Jermaine Ifedi back at a position where, you know, I think everybody was wondering last year why they moved him to guard. Now they're sort of conceding that a little bit by moving him back to tackle, where maybe he's going to be, you know, the position he played more in college and maybe is a better fit. Same with Mark Wolinski, who is back to playing the position that he's played most of his career. Last year they had moved him right before the season as well. You know, Ethan Postick, at least a second round pick to kind of throw in there. And, you know, at least with George Fant, he has played 9 or 10 games now. So, if he does become the starting left tackle, which I don't rule out, they at least have their sort of a track record there, and it won't be the first time he's ever done any of this before. So, and I think their overall depth is better. You know, at least if, you know, if a guy like Odey Obusi doesn't win a starting job, you at least have a backup who has played quite a bit They sort of had that last year with Jamarcus Webb, but it seemed apparent from the start that he wasn't a good fit here. They seemed to like, Obusi, the offseason he had, program he had, they seemed to be happier about it. And basically, he was at least healthy. I mean, last year when they signed Jamarcus Webb as sort of their big free agent acquisition, he was immediately hurt, really didn't do anything in the offseason and much of training camp and all of that. So, their guys at least were, other than Jokel, everybody was out there and healthy and working a lot in the offseason program and things like that. So I think that those are the reasons to feel a little bit better about it. But I don't think anybody is still going to feel like it's the strength of the team or any of that. It by far is the biggest question mark about the Seahawks, no question, heading into this season.
Bob, full disclaimer, I'm a Mizzou guy, so I am a Justin Britt fan. But I heard you say they're going to plug him in at center and let him kind of plug it or set it and forget it, if you will, because he's had a lot of success in multiple spots already. What does that mean for Ethan Posick and where he's going to get his shot and whether he's a viable option to try and get some playing time early, given all the uncertainty?
Yeah, well, Britt played center. They moved him to center last year, and that was his third position in 3 years. And they felt like last year, he really came on. The one game he missed was the game when they only scored 5 points against Tampa Bay, and they felt like it was evident that how much better he was at center and how much better he made the line when he was out there. So that by far is now his position going forward. And the question is just going to be, he's another guy coming up on the last year of his contract, and I think everybody's been expecting that something would get done before the season, but nothing has yet. So, I don't know if that's what exactly will happen there. Posick, also played some tackle and some guard at LSU, and right now they've got him working at both guard and tackle on the right side. I think his immediate future will be that they know he can play center. He will play some center, but he's not going to compete with Britt. They are going to throw him into the competition on the right side at guard and tackle, and potentially compete. Basically, he's going to compete with Jermaine Ifedi for the right tackle spot. You're probably hoping Ifedi wins that job because he was the first round pick last year, and you probably don't want to sort of admit your first round pick is a bust after 2 years. So, I view realistically for Posick this year is that he'd be your swing backup. And last year their backup center was a guy named Joey Hunt, who basically could play only center, and I think they felt at times like maybe that limited their game day. When you got to go with seven or eight guys, your game day roster flexibility. With Posick, one of the things they really like about him is that he has extensive experience playing all three spots, and so they're going to work him at guard and tackle, and probably primarily right tackle in the preseason, and see how that goes there, and that will give them some options. And I sort of see him being that guy who could be who'd probably be your sixth or seventh guy, maybe most logically. But maybe he up and beats out Ifedi, and they move Ifedi back to guard, or maybe he beats out Mark Lewinsky at guard as well, if they decide to go that route. So they really wanted to just add a lot more competition to it, after last year. One of the problems with the injuries and some other stuff, I'm not sure they even felt like guys had to work that hard for roster spots and starting spots, and maybe that caught up to some of the young guys as well, that they felt like they'd just been handed the jobs to them. So that's part of what they wanted this year, I think, to have a 9 or 10 man battle in training camp where, Britt maybe is the only guy that for sure has a job lined up, locked up going into the season. And I think that's what they wanted, is to throw a lot of guys out there and sort of make the best of it and see what happens.
Interesting. We'll monitor that closely. I think it's only fair to point out, since we're all pretty tough on Seattle's current O-line state, I know I have been, and I know for the life of me, I still don't understand the Luke Jokel deal, but they have now spent either a first or second rounder, I believe, in two out of the past three drafts, so they are kind of fostering that competition, as Bob mentions. I think that outside of Bill Belichick, Pete Carroll probably as good as any coach in the NFL. That's just my personal opinion. It's been really fascinating, Bob, to watch those two men seemingly collect running backs, more so New England this year and Seattle last year in the draft, but then they double down. They go get Eddie Lacy. I mentioned in jest about the Lacy sort of weight clause and how that's going to be an ongoing discussion. But how do you assess this backfield dynamic? They obviously have Thomas Rawls still, and then they hope they have a motivated Lacy. They got CJ Procise coming back from injury. How do you think this all shakes out? I know Seattle coming off their worst rushing performance of the Wilson Carroll era, I believe.
Oh, by far, yeah. No, they had ranked in the top four in rushing every year since Russell had become the quarterback, and last year they fell to 25th, and that was a huge part of everything that happened. And, it was – you know, part of what happened last year was the injuries. Thomas Rawls, you know, it's another thing with, you know, Seahawks fans. Why will the running game be better? You know, Rawls wasn't doing anything this time last year. He was coming off the broken ankle. He had suffered late in his rookie season and really did nothing until he got into the season, and then immediately got hurt again in game two, and an injury that I think they felt was sort of related to the fact that he hadn't, you know, really gotten back into football shape. So, you know, they wanted depth after what happened last year, right? You know, they had, I mean, there were times literally in training camp last year, they basically had Kristen Michael and Alex Collins, and that was about it. It was not doing anything because Rawls was hurt, Procise was hurt. You know, Zach Brooks, who was their other drafted running back, it became apparent early he wasn't really going to factor in, and they hadn't done much to address it. So, you know, with in free agency, so they really, it was another spot they really wanted to add depth. You know, Rawls is entering the last year of his contract. He can be a restricted free agent at the end of the season. Lacy signed a 1-year deal. You know, I think they sort of like that they, you know, two guys who are pretty motivated, driven to have good years and stay healthy, and in Lacy's case, stay in shape. And then Procise is another, you know, both Procise and Balls had played great when they've been healthy, but that's sort of been rare that they've been healthy. And, you know, Pete Carroll, frankly, you know, was asked that at the end of the season, is that a concern? And said, for sure it is. And that they, you know, you gotta make sure you have depth there. So that was a big part of, you know, if it hadn't been Lacy, they also brought in Adrian Peterson and Jamal Charles. They were going to sign somebody. And I think they just decided that Lacy, being a little bit younger and you know, averaged 5.1 yards a carry last year when he was healthy, I think they felt like was sort of the best fit. So they did make an aggressive move to go get him early in the free agency process. You know, they still have Alex Collins as well. I know fantasy-wise, everybody's going to want to know who's going to be the starting running back. From the Seahawks right. perspective, I don't know that they care that much about deciding that. I think they'll be happy to take it into the first week and feel like both Lacy and Rawls can help them and sort of let that work itself out. And I think they would prefer to keep CJ Procise in sort of a third down, 2-minute back role. Mm-hmm. You know, for one, he has proven, you know, for better or worse, he's proven sort of injury prone. And I don't think they feel like the best use of him is going to, or what would be best for the team is using him 20 carries a game, and unless he really proved by far the best of the running backs. But logically, you know, you have guys like Lacy and Rawls who are sort of a better fit for being your first and second down backs and doing the punishing between the tackles running. And then you have Procise, who you can bring in either two back sets or on third downs or in their 2-minute offense. You know, if you've watched the Seahawks a lot in the last few years, you know, it's they've always done that, even when Marshawn, you know, he would come off the field when they got the ball. The fans, you know, TV announcers sometimes we'd laugh because announcers would be like, why is Marshawn not out there? And it's like, it's just what they have always done. They have always sort of, in the hurry up, they've sort of gone with a running back who's a little bit better who they feel like is a better receiver and things like that. And so they often would take, you know, go with Robert Turbin, or and then they sort of drafted Procise to be that guy. And he's got an extensive receiving background to do that. And that's, to them, that's a pretty key role to when you're in the hurry up or when you're in the 2-minute offense or on third downs. And so I think that's what they want to do with Procise. So I think in their mind, it's kind of Rawls and Lacy battling for the kind of the base down running back role, and those guys probably splitting it a little bit, and then just kind of waiting to see who plays better, to see who to give the more carries to, and then Procise being that third down back, and then you know, seeing if a guy like Alex Collins, who they really raved about in the offseason, being in better shape and things like that, if he can do that and also become a factor and maybe be in the fourth running back on the roster.
Just a couple minutes left with Bob Condotta. A ton of good information here, and we're kind of going with a theme of, you know, motivated guys, and when one that comes to mind, or at least of someone that the Seahawks certainly drafted thinking they would find a way to motivate him, is the second rounder, their first pick, Malik McDowell. Bob, what is it about Pete Carroll's environment that lets him get these types of players and often get the most out of them? What have you seen from McDowell thus far, and where's he at?
Yeah, well, right. I mean, especially defensively. I mean, Pete has, you know, Pete is one of the best. I think he'll go down football history, one of the best defensive coaches in football history, both at the college and NFL level. And, you know, this is really, despite no matter who the coordinator is, I mean, this is Pete's defense, and they're never going to vary much in philosophy, no matter who the coordinator is, and sort of do things. And so he has a good eye for figuring out who's going to fit well and doing what they're asking him to do. And, you know, they haven't, you know, it's not like every single gamble they've taken. I mean, Percy Harvin didn't work out, and Right. Chris and Michael didn't really work out. You know, it's not like every sort of guy who's been maybe a character issue or whatever has come in here and they've completely turned him around. But I think they feel like with McDowell, you know, it's not really like there's off-field issues or anything. It's just more of a, you know, was he always motivated to play at a high level last year? And I think they feel like he was not being used properly. You know, the Michigan State used him primarily as a nose tackle. The Seahawks are going to use him in a 3 and 5 tech spot. You know, basically they see him as I think a future Michael Bennett, and a guy who would play basically in the same manner as Bennett, where he's more outside in the base defense as essentially a defensive end at the 5 technique spot, and then moving inside in passing downs and being able to pass rush and sort of use his quickness and everything that way. And then in McDowell's case, he's just so tall. He's really long in there. And if he makes a little bit of progress and holds his hands up, he's going to be hard to pass over at times. So they like that about him too. So I think ideally he's going to be on the field a lot next year. I think they feel like they can find a lot of ways to use him. You know, Bennett suffered the first significant injury of his career last year. He's played a lot of snaps the last few years. I think they would like to lessen that. You know, when they won the Super Bowl in 2013, Bennett played 57% of the snaps, which was the most of any defensive lineman. Every season since then, he's played 80%+, and Cliff Averill has also played a lot. Each of those guys are now 30-plus years old. With Suba Rubin, same thing, inside. So they wanted to add some young guys and try to hopefully take some of the pressure off the vets a little bit. If they can decrease their playing time a little bit, keep them fresher for the long haul, and you sort of just prevent injury as well if you're not out there quite as much, and especially not out there tired late in game. So I think McDowell can play quite a bit if he's not a de facto starter. He could certainly play a lot of snaps, and same as Frank Clark and then Jaron Reed, their second round pick from last year, also another guy that they need to step up and play a lot more for them this year. So that's sort of the future of their defensive line. Bennett signed the big deal at the end of last year, so I think he's going to be here for a few more years. But Tuba Rubin and Cliff Averill are both guys that who knows how much longer they'll be here necessarily. So they needed to kind of reboot the offense or the defensive line as well, just the same way they were sort of taking some steps to do that in the secondary this year.
It'll be interesting to see for sure. That next wave of Seattle pass rush looks promising with guys like Clark and potentially McDowell and others that we've mentioned. Bob, I don't know where the time goes, but we have already run out of it. I really appreciate you joining the Pro Football Weekly podcast. Tons of great Seahawks info here. One more reminder to our listeners. Make sure you're following Bob on Twitter at bcondota, bcondotta. And, of course, checking out his work in the Seattle Times. Bob, I had a lot of fun. I hope we can get you back on the podcast once the season gets going.
Sure. Yeah. Anytime. Thanks. Yeah.
All right. Thank you once again. That is Bob Condotta of the Seattle Times talking Seahawks.
If you're looking for a website to keep you up to date on all the latest news, scoops, and rumors from around the NFL, look no further than ProFootballWeekly.com. It's the place for all the best news around the league. You'll find breaking news, hard-hitting columns, video, photos, podcasts, and more. All 32 teams, 24/7, 365 days a year. While you're at it, catch up with all things NFL in our newsletter. Our NFL Daily Update will send you all of the news you need to keep up with the pace of the NFL. You'll get news, analysis, and more sent right to your inbox at noon, Monday through Friday. Sign up now to start getting NFL news during the week. Pro Football Weekly, bringing the best coverage in the NFL to its readers since 1967. Are you following us on social media? Like us on Facebook at facebook.com/ProFootballWeekly. Then head over to Twitter and follow PF Weekly and never miss an NFL update. There are plenty of ways for you to enjoy Pro Football Weekly, whether in print or online. If news breaks in the NFL, don't miss a thing and keep it at ProFootballWeekly.com. We now return to the Pro Football Weekly podcast. Here's your host, Arthur Arkish, talking all things NFL.
All right, thanks again to Bob for talking Seahawks. Nothing if not interesting club. Still a legitimate contender, I believe. That window remains open. We'll see what they did as far as that offensive line goes and if they can stay a little bit healthier this time around. So before I do throw it to Matt Williamson for what was a really good Steelers discussion, do want to first refamiliarize you with our great sponsor, Loot Crate. In August Loot Crate, you'll find items from The Legend of Zelda, Adventure Time, and The Lord of the Rings. One lucky subscriber will also win a Mega Crate of seriously epic proportions. You have until the 19th and 9 p.m. Pacific to subscribe and receive that month's crate. And when the cutoff happens, that's it. It's over. Go to lootcrate.com/Shaw and enter my code Shaw, S-H-A-W, to save $3 off any new subscription today. All right, so we've got great franchises this month in the Kingdom theme on Loot Crate, and Legend of Zelda is certainly the one I'll be looking for, although I am a fan of Lord of the Rings too. So when I pick up the best surprise I know is coming in the mail, as I mentioned, I'll be looking for hopefully a Zelda t-shirt, but they have all kinds of other awesome monthly wearables and accessories from cult classics and your favorite franchises. They've got stuff for pets. If you want to geek out your pet, try Loot Pets. They've got fancy bigger boxes with their bigger loot in the Loot Crate DX. So it's an epic range of pop culture items for less than $20 a month. If you're on a quest for epic gear, housewares, and collectibles, Loot Crate has it. Again, it's the best surprise you know is coming. And one more time with the offer. Go to lootcrate.com/Shaw and enter my code Shaw, S-H-A-W, to save $3 off any new subscription today. I won't promise it's going to help you win Zelda if you're still on that quest, but it'll certainly get you to some epic Zelda gear. Again, Adventure Time and Lord of the Rings. So thank you very much to Loot Crate, and thank you to Matt Williamson. We have kind of been chasing each other to do this for a while, and I'm glad it finally lined up to get some awesome Steelers discussion on today's podcast with Matt Williamson. So without further ado, here's that interview. We have Matt Williamson up next on the Pro Football Weekly podcast. Matt is a former college and NFL scout, ESPN writer, currently works with The Score, the Steelers Radio Network. He is the host of the Locked On NFL podcast. You can find his work all over the place is what I'm trying to say. Matt, what's going on, man? We really appreciate you taking time with us today.
Yeah, it's great to finally talk to you. I've listened to a bunch of these. They're really good. I've paid attention to your guys' work for a long time.
Thank you.
And, yeah, I've gotten – since leaving ESPN, I've gotten much more involved – still doing national things, of course, but much more involved locally here in Pittsburgh with the Steelers Radio Network and going to – I'll be at training camp several times over the – and I was at mini camp. I broadcasted from the facility, the draft. So I've been doing a lot of Steelers stuff.
Very cool. Well, that's going to be perfect for today. We are up, of course, to the Steelers offseason recap. Let's just dive right in. But let me first mention, I can't remember if I did. Make sure you're following Matt on Twitter. A great follow over there, at WilliamsonNFL. And let's get going. I can't take credit for this. That I owe to Twitter, but I got a chuckle when I read it yesterday. Matt, what's Le'Veon Bell smoking now if the contract details that I saw that he turned down at the tag deadline are accurate? What's your thoughts on that? I thought I saw $30 million guaranteed in the first 2 years, $42 million through three, an average of $12 million annually for a running back. What's going on here?
It's crazy. I mean, I can't confirm any of those being true. I mean, there's a lot of talk. Is that really something that happened? Is it not? It's a really interesting situation, though. I mean, I said leading up to this that I kind of said I don't know that I could create a contract that the Steelers should say yes to and Bell should say yes to, because he's going to make like 12-ish million a year under the franchise tag, which is by far the most in the league for a running back. I mean, LeSean McCoy makes like $5 million less. Mm-hmm. So he's making double the going rate on an annual basis just with that. And I think there's a really good chance that Pittsburgh franchises him again next year. So he gets that plus a bump of, 10% or whatever.
Right.
So really the starting contract, if I'm Bell to even listen, is $25 million guaranteed. And that's so much more than any running back is making. But you can understand both sides, that the Steelers or, somebody negotiating against Bell right now would say, dude, you're asking for three times the highest paid annual contract of a running back right now.
Right.
But Bell would counter and say, well, that's what you gave Antonio Brown. Aren't I as valuable to the Steelers as Antonio Brown?
Right.
And he's right. And really what he's saying is, I really don't care what other running backs are making. I'm interested to be paid amongst the best offensive players outside of quarterbacks in the NFL.
Yep.
Because that's what I am. Besides David Johnson, who else gives you what I can bring on an every down passing game, running game basis? And
yeah,
he's right. How long's Ben going to be around? This window's closing. They're one of the best teams in the league. I don't know if there's a right answer on either side.
Well, and that's, you know, I would interject, and of course it's not like Kevin Colbert would be listening to me or Le'Veon Bell, but I guess my counter to all that would be, I think David Johnson has played 32 consecutive games. I know Antonio Brown has never been suspended or torn up his knee, so that has to be obviously what, you know, that certainly complicates these negotiations a bit, you would think.
No doubt. And being around the team, I don't think anyone's worried about Le'Veon Bell being a bad guy or going the Martavis Bryant route. But, I mean, he already has strikes against him. So if he does something small that any of us could do and get pulled over or do something that, you know, that endangers his football career, boom, he's going to get harder than the average guy because he's already been suspended.
Yep.
As for the injuries, I don't believe he's, quote, injury prone. I mean, he's not Ryan Matthews, you know, and I'm not big on that term to begin with.
Right.
I've been critical of Tomlin over the years, going back to Willie Parker, that he grinds his running backs into the ground. And that's certainly been true with Bell. But you can also make the argument that why would you ever take him off the field? You know, I mean, we're here to win games. I mean, he saved the season last year and became the foundation of the offense. But I don't think he's more injury prone than the next guy. But he's going to get a huge workload, especially when you consider his receiving skills. He should be on the field an awful lot. I hear you, though. And the other thing about him, too, is he came to the league abnormally young. You know, so maybe, you know, I mean, he's a year younger than you would expect for someone that's done as much as he has.
Okay. So, yeah, maybe that would offset a little bit of the tire tread, if you will. Certainly in the back of my man, mind, a third time's a try, Matt, I was thinking late last season, man, Tomlin is working this guy like someone who, A, is in a contract year, and B, as you said, certainly is, good enough to save their season. And he did. And the workload that he handled was absolutely remarkable in November and December. So just a dynamite player, obviously, but this is a bold move in my opinion of him. Again, and neither of us can confirm the numbers, but what we've seen out there from some very reputable reporters, he is absolutely rolling the dice here, and we will see what happens with that. Lots more to get to with Matt Williamson, of course. Matt is writing at The Score and works for the Steelers Radio Network, broadcast on the Steelers Radio Network. You can find him on Locked On NFL, his great podcast. He's all over the place, and we appreciate him taking out a couple minutes today. Matt, I thought the Big Ben retirement story was the biggest non-story of the offseason, personally. Who walks away from this offense? But your thoughts on that, because he did allow it to linger. He didn't shoot anything down until, you know, later in the offseason. And kind of just as far as this offense goes, is there any weakness? Is there any quarterback that's set up better in the NFL with their supporting cast? For my money, I'm not sure there is.
No, I don't think there is. And to be honest, with all respect to Dallas and Oakland, I think the Steelers have the best line in the league. Mm-hmm. I think Bell's slightly the best receiver. I think Brown is in the conversation for being best receiver, and now they're extremely deep at that position.
Yeah.
I think Martavis Bryant is a sleeping giant. So to answer your question, I think he has the best supporting cast in the whole league. I do think it's on his mind, though. You know, he has taken a beating over his career, and less so in the last couple of years than people realize. He doesn't get hit under Haley as much as he used to, you know, when it was Arians and seven-step drops and him shredding, you know, throwing defensive ends off him and making plays downfield. He's revised his game, you know. Yep. I mean, he's gotten older. But he also has a couple kids now, and he's married, and, you know, he had that motorcycle accident and his incident in Georgia. I mean, I think he's grown up a lot and become much more of a family man, that he's got a bazillion dollars in the bank, and I don't think it would break his heart to walk away right now.
Yeah, and let me just be clear. It's not up to me or you, obviously. I'm not passing judgment if that's what he elected to do. I just still seems to be on top of his game. And as you said, so much great pieces around him. It seems like this Super Bowl title window is open. You mentioned Martavis Bryant already a couple times, and I was going to go there, obviously, but let's go there now. You said you've spent good deal.
Arthur, before you do, if you don't mind me interjecting real quick.
Not at all.
The thing about Ben is he has 2 years left on his deal.
Okay.
And about 36 million reasons to play them out.
sure. That's
that factors in.
That makes a lot of sense. And he's, you know, just another joy to watch. Obviously, you mentioned the way he can still shed defensive ends in the pocket. So strong and such great improv. Just really one of the best in the game, obviously. What can a healthy and a motivated and, walking the straight and narrow Martavis Bryant do for this offense as if it really needs that much more?
More than anyone out there can realize. Mm-hmm. You know, when you watch him in person, seeing him at minicamp, he, and this has been reported, he's put on 10 to 15 pounds of muscle, and he was a tall, good-looking cat to begin with. And this is not being a Steeler homer. I think him and Julio Jones are the most talented wide receivers in the entire league. I mean, wow. He is a utter freak, and my scouting eye looks at him and just drools. I mean, the way he changes direction, the body control, he might be the fastest guy on the team. He can do it all. I mean, they hand it to him on reverses. They get it to him in space. But they, you know, I don't think there's a lot of teams crying for the Steelers last year in terms of weaponry.
Right.
But, you know, a perfect example was when they played the Patriots, Bell went down in the championship game, and then all the focus went to AB. You know, mm-hmm. That you can't do that now. I mean, with Bryant out there, they have three weapons now that are elite.
Yeah, no question. It's a scary proposition. And frankly, I'll tell you what, Matt, even before Bell went down, I think from time to time, defenses did find a way to just, you know, really all they had to do was focus their attention on those two. And I know that's no small task, but even without a Martavis Bryant, it seemed like there needed to be another guy. What's your thoughts on Juju Smith-Schuster? I'd imagine he wins that slot job right away, but how do you see him fitting into things here?
It might be slow, to be honest with you, and that's not a knock on him at all.
Yeah.
You know, Sammy Coates was that complimentary receiver for the first month or so. I mean, he mm-hmm. was just an outside the numbers, deep threat, and then he really mangled his hand, and it wasn't the same, and he kind of got faded away. But he still is big and fast, and if you watch the first month of the Steelers' offense, they would align him on the opposite side of Brown almost every snap, and when Ben would see one-on-one, he basically could put it on the Heinz Field scoreboard. We're throwing a bomb to Coates, and we'll see how it goes. mm-hmm. And when that element was gone, that hurt him a lot. Bryant will certainly bring that and more. Eli Rogers kind of emerged as a slot guy. And I think what they saw in Schuster was, you know, Rogers and AB are kind of the smaller guys. Coates and Brown are sort of the big outside the numbers speed guy. Yep. Where Schuster, I think, is a little bit of all of them. You know, I think he kind of reminds him of Hines Ward. You know, that he's put him all over the formation, tough guy, block. He was the youngest guy in the entire draft. You know, that his best years are probably ahead of him.
Yep.
And they have an awful lot of receiver right now.
Yeah, no question. Juju is a fun player to watch. He's so tenacious. I like that Hines Ward comparison. I know our guy, Greg Gabriel, our head scout at PFW, had a first-round grade on him and thinks he may have as good of upside as any receiver in this draft. It'll be fun to watch him develop. Let's talk about the defense.
You know what? I mean, again, I'm sorry to interrupt, but
no.
I don't think they planned on taking a wide receiver in the second round. I just think that they had a first-round grade on him, too, and said, wow, I can't believe he's still there. Let's grab him.
Matt, the more you interrupt me, the better off our listeners are because they get to listen to me talk less and they get more insightful info. So please keep that part up. What about the defense? It's young. It has a lot of tools. I look at Bud Dupree and Ryan Shazier, and those are two guys at least that my spotlight's on a little bit this year. Let's talk about Dupree first. Is he more likely to be the next James Harrison or Jarvis Jones? I know that's a huge range, but what do you think about Dupree entering, I believe, year three and looking for his first full healthy season, correct?
Yeah, that's too big of a range. Because there's
Hall of Famer or first-round right. bust central. Right.
There's not a more beloved Steelers outside linebacker than James, and yeah. Jarvis left a bad taste in everyone's mouth, to say the least. But Dupree, he's one of the most improved players, in my opinion, in minicamp. He looks great. He's a big, physical guy, very powerful, has some work still to do with his recognition and developing more pass rush moves, but I think Harrison's been great for him and will be great for Watt as well as a role model. And the Steelers have this great history of, especially on defense, of a handful of guys that know the old school way that hand it over to the next generation, and it's been going on my whole lifetime. And Harrison's very much that type of guy. I do think Dupree will be a above average starter, an 8-10 sack type of guy for the foreseeable future, live up to the first round billing, a high quality player.
Okay, and let's just stick with the position for a minute. What'd you think about the T.J. Watt pick? Because it's interesting you say the Steelers probably surprised to see Juju there in round two. At least in the back of their minds, they must have been thinking Ted Thompson may pounce right now on the hometown kid to help his pass rush. They trade out of round one, and boom, it seems to fall into Colbert's lap, right?
Exactly. And I remember I was on the radio here locally, and someone asked me, realistically, who do you think the Steelers end up with at 30? And that would be, you know, that they would be very happy about. And I said, what? You know, I mean, it was a strong edge class. That was a top need. He does. I think he could stand to add 10 pounds. You know, I mean, these Watts are late developers. Mm-hmm. And he doesn't have to start week one. You know, they still have Harrison and Dupree as their starters. They can bring him along slowly. I know they're very happy with what they've seen so far. And I think he has a bright future. Excited to see the preseason.
So the Steelers are very, very good up front, obviously, with Stephon Tuitt and Cameron Hayward, and I think they're probably really excited about this youngster, Javon Hargrave. They get a lot of their pass rush from there, and that's why we went with the edge stable to see if it's going to balance out a little bit. What about up the middle of the defense? Ryan Shazier certainly has star power, but they let Lawrence Timmons go, and then they swing and miss on trying to land the big fish in Dante Hightower. How big is this year for Ryan Shazier, and does it tell us that maybe they're not fully comfortable with where they're at that position going in on Hightower like that?
Yeah, there's two positions that I think they're a little questionable at, and that's inside linebacker, second-level linebacker, mm-hmm. and tight end, you know, especially after the Darius Green situation, that maybe if a veteran, you know, gets cut or is floating around, I thought they might have interest in like a David Harris, that it might not be a terrible idea to add a veteran at those positions. They like Vince Williams, but he's much more of a two-down guy. The guys behind him are basically special teamers. But I also think that, much like the Patriots, that you're going to see a lot more basically five-man fronts, you know, with their three starting defensive linemen who they really, really like, two edge guys like we just talked about, Shazier, and then five guys on the back end. You know, I think you're going to see a lot more big nickel, that position's just not going to be on the field a lot. However, you know, Shazier, in a way, he kind of reminds me of Paul Amalu, in that if my sister went to practice with me, she'd be saying, who's that guy that's faster than everybody else out there? That just doesn't look like the rest. He's a very special talent. And he's come a long way with his recognition and coverage. He misses some tackles still. But they love him. But I think – and he has an injury history. But I think of all the guys on defense, he's the one they could afford to lose the least.
Wow. Okay. Well, and that's a fascinating comp there. Obviously, one of the things that put Troy Polamalu in Canton, in addition to, like you said, the rare diagnostics and playing with his hair on fire, he was also quite durable, quite dependable. Do you think that Shazier can kind of kick this injury bug and be the guy, this indispensable figure that you just kind of alluded to for them?
It's hard to say.
And I know you said you don't like injury prone. I don't mean to go back there. I respect that.
Right.
I don't like it either. Maybe they're fluky things, but he has been banged up a lot, obviously.
He has. And a lot of them, I think, you know, just going back to my days in recruiting and scouting, he's a very tightly wound athlete. You know, there's very little body fat on him. And those guys tend to pull things. You know, you see some receivers like that. I think that might consistently be an issue with him. I do think he's matured and has learned to play through nicks and scrapes, and, you know, they wouldn't be for me and you, but in the football world, you know, that he can play through things a little bit more now. A guy that I work with, Dale Lawley, made an interesting observation today saying a lot of Shazier's injuries have come when he's just kind of around the pile. And I guess that when he was interviewed recently saying, hey, I either need to be in the pile or away from the pile. You know, that all these bodies falling on me late in the play after the whistle need to be avoided. And maybe he's maturing and figuring that out.
Interesting. That's really interesting stuff. I want to also, we got a few minutes left here with Matt Williamson. Check him out on Twitter at WilliamsonNFL. Check out his work at The Score on the Steelers Radio Network. Definitely his podcast, Locked On NFL. Great stuff there. In other words, you can find his work all over the place. We're glad you're listening to us today. We got a few minutes left talking Steelers. I want to talk about the young secondary, but before I do, your thoughts on the mid-round picks. Let's go with Josh Dobbs first, because he really fascinates me. What do you think about him as a prospect and his chances to potentially fill some pretty big shoes here down the road in a couple years?
Yeah, you know, I liked it. This is too harsh, but I liked it better when they made it. And then after I thought about it and watched him a little bit in camp, you know, he hasn't thrown the ball really, really well. But, you know, again, it's just mini camping, and we'll see. But my thoughts on him are, if he's a fourth-round pick and he turns out to be a long-time better version of Landry Jones, then that's certainly worth it. Mm-hmm. It's a stretch for me to think that he could be Ben's successor, though. And I tend to think that this upcoming draft class, they may have to make a Chiefs-like move, you know, that use an early pick to get the next guy. It would surprise me if a year from now you and I have a conversation and say, boy, I think Dobbs could be the starter here. You know, I mean, I think he's going to be serviceable. I think he's going to have a long career, do everything you want. I just don't know that he'll ever throw the football well enough to be, you know, a top 20 type starter.
Okay, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And obviously teams aren't just finding Dak Prescott's every year, so I get the, you know, the odds against him as that mid-round guy looking to ascend. What about James Conner? I think most people know the story by now, inspiration, a cancer survivor. He's also a heck of a football player when he's right. What do you think about him and where he fits into things right away and long-term as well? This would seem to be a great fit for him to get to stay home and to get to learn behind Le'Veon Bell, who we've obviously both gushed about.
Yeah, I mean, not only am I a Pittsburgh homer, but I'm a Pitt guy, and I started my career as a recruiting assistant at Pitt, so I love the pick, you know, just from a sentimental reasons. Yeah. But I also like the pick from a football perspective. Is he got a lot better as the season went along last year. And a note that people haven't really mentioned with him, and Tomlin said it to us as he walked by. I mean, it was funny because we were broadcasting from the draft, and Tomlin walked by, and he just kind of snickered. He's like, can you believe people are saying that we would take this guy just because he's from Pitt? You know, they don't use third round picks as gifts to the university next door. They like him a lot. And the other thing he kind of smirked about, and people don't realize with Connor, was he started his career as a defensive end. So he's tackled people, you know, and what I mean by that is he's going to be a core special teamer from the second that he puts on pads, you know, that he's going to be playing a lot of downs on special teams while he spells Bell. So we'll see. I mean, again, I kind of think it's a Dobbs-like situation in that it would shock me if they decide not to bring Bell back after the franchise tag and they say, oh, Connor's a suitable replacement. I mean, I think he's probably a banger, but that's great. But in the meantime, he's going to be a valuable special teamer.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And let's wrap up with the secondary. There's a lot of young moving parts and maybe movable parts is the best way to put it with guys like Sean Davis, and they just drafted Cam Sutton. Just kind of fill people in on the secondary dynamic, who needs to do what. How is Artie Burns a rookie? I guess let's start there, and then and can they count on Senquez Golson for anything at this point?
Yeah, and they've used a lot of picks over the last 3 years on the back end. And I think they gradually want to play more man coverage. But they obviously aren't going to scrap their defense that's been very zone-oriented and matchup zone-oriented because they're a good team. You know, it's not like, hey, let's fire the defense coordinator and go all press man. You know, we're going to still try to win 12 games a year as they gradually become more of a press man team. And we've seen Brady carve them up in the past because of the style of play that they make. Burns, if I mentioned Dupree as being one of the most impressive taking a leap forward candidates,
yeah,
Burns is certainly in that conversation too. I think he has number one corner skills and is starting to play like that. When he got there, they lined him up against Antonio Brown snap after snap after snap. As soon as he got in pads, you know, as soon as he got in the black and gold, and Brown ate him alive. But I think it served, you know, it showed a lot of resilience from him, and he's really upgraded. I think he's going to be a real good one. Davis is kind of a jack of all trades, right? Play him all over the field. When you play the Bengals, he's the guy you want on Tyler Eifert type, you know, I mean, and I think they're very happy with him. All three rookies from last year, Burns, Hargraves, and Davis, all look like hits. Golson, who knows? You know, you feel for him. He's a smaller guy, But he stepped in a hole last year. I mean, it's not a it was a total fluke injury. And they loved him before that. I liked him a lot coming out of school. He's a pure slot corner, but who knows? You know, and Sutton, I think they look at as a do-it-all guy. You know, he has a real high football intelligence. He can play a little bit of safety. That's not ideal, but he could be outside. He could be inside. I think he plays a lot. And they still have guys like Gay and Cockrell who are the, you know, that are serviceable and you know who they are.
Would they love to see, though, just sticking with that for 1 second, Will Gay in the slot, is he at the point now where he's become a liability? Do they want Golson to unseat him? I know he's been around a long time, but they can upgrade there, I'd think.
Yeah. I mean, I think ideally, if you hit a home run, Artie Burns and Sutton are your outside corners and Golson's your interior. You know who Gay is. He's probably going to be around one more year. He knows the system. He's smart. He's not going to blow coverages, but he gets beat, and he's just a guy at this point, and his career is probably over after this year. Cockrell's been a real solid starter, but much more of a zone player. But I would bet in the end that either Golson or Sutton unseats Gay as a slot guy, and Cockrell and Burns are your outside guys.
All right, very good. That is terrific stuff today from Matt Williamson, guys. I hope you've learned as much as I did. On the way out, you kind of, I feel like, have been hinting at it, but do you have a fantasy football nugget for us? It can be a shoe-in, a sleeper, anything that's on your mind.
Well, the top two guys go off early in your fantasy drafts. You know,
I mean, no doubt.
Top four, top five picks.
Yep.
But I don't know what Martavis Bryant's ADP is, but I would take him two rounds before that.
Wow. All right. You're getting me excited. All right. But then I got to just follow up quickly. And I know we don't really know these guys off the field. Do you think that there's a good chance that he's kind of learned from what's happened? I mean, it's all in front of him. If he can just stay on the field, do you trust him from an availability standpoint?
Yes. And I trust the guys that I work with now that because they saw him before and after, and they say, boy, he seems like a changed guy. Mm-hmm. We know people with substance abuse problems are the best liars in the world, you know, that maybe he's just telling us the right things. But strangely, he did his recovery in Vegas, you know, which you wouldn't think that would be the place to get away. But all he did was go to meetings and lift, and he's got a young kid, and he keeps saying, Family man, I know what I did wrong. I let my teammates down. It's exactly what you want to hear from him.
Right. All right, well, you guys heard it here first. Two rounds earlier than you're thinking on Martavis Bryant, and the Steelers are going to be, it looks like, a force to be reckoned with this year. Matt, I've already taken too much of your time.
Oh, I interrupt you. Yeah. Use your last pick on Connor, because when Bell does get hurt, you're going to shove him right in your lineup in this offense.
All right, there you go. Great stuff. Hey, Matt, can I bother you again when the season gets a little closer and we'll do this? Because this was, again, I really learned a lot here, and I'm sure the listeners did too.
Absolutely, man.
All right, it's Matt Williamson. Check him out on Twitter at WilliamsonNFL and check out his work on The Score at the Steelers Radio Network and at the Locked On Podcast Network. We'll have him again on the program soon. Matt, enjoy the rest of your week. Thanks again for being so generous with your time.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Alrighty, did I tell you that was some good stuff with Matt? Awesome to hear kind of his scouting vantage point on the Pittsburgh Steelers. Another legitimate contender, obviously, in the AFC this year. So thank you very much to Matt Williamson of The Comeback and Matt Williamson of The Score and of the Steelers Radio Network and also of the Locked On Podcast Network. We've also got Bob Condotta of the Seattle Times. Thank you very much to him. My producer, Dan Mott, for spinning the dials, editing out all my cuss words. Really appreciate it, Dan Mott. Loot Crate, you guys are awesome. Go get your loot on. And of course, the biggest thank you goes to you guys. It's been a journey, this off-season recap series, but I'm glad you guys are sticking with me. It's been a lot of fun getting through these teams and getting a lot of intel as the season gets ready to ramp up. So a handful more to go. We'll have at least one more this week. And just to give you a heads up, I'm hitting the road here soon on my little camp tour. No, I won't be hitting to all 32 cities like this podcast, but there will be a select few, especially in the Midwest. I'll definitely check out what's going on with the Bears and Packers. The Lions and the Colts are holding joint practices, so we'll make sure we check those out as well. And who knows, maybe another surprise or two along the way. In the meantime, guys, thank you again so much. Make sure you check out ProFootballWeekly.com this week. Lots of fresh material on the way starting Monday as I tape here. And I look forward to being back with you guys in another new Pro Football Weekly podcast very soon. Have a great week.